Welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Megillas Esther Perek Ches, the 8th chapter of the book of Esther. Our Perek is 17 psukim long, and we're going to look at it in 5 basic sections. The first 2 psukim are our first section, in which Mordechai replaces Haman. Let's take a look at the details. By Yom Ahu, on that day, we know that the king gives Achashverosh to Esther, the house of Haman, to give it to Mordechai, and because Esther explains Ma Huloi, his relationship to her. The king at this point in time gives his ring, which he takes off Haman's hand, and he gives it to Mordechai, and there seems to be this reconstitution of Mordechai in the palace of the king. We should first of all appreciate the ultimate Nahapoichu, the ultimate switch around, which is the theme of the Megillah. Here you have the person, Haman, who was the Sorera Yehudim, who was this Jew hater, the person who was going to commit the genocide against the nation of Israel, being replaced by the very person who triggered this whole process in the first place. Just to appreciate the incredible swing around. One thing also to appreciate is, just in terms of the staging of this and the pattern of this, this parak begins with the words Bayomahu, on that day. 2 prokim back, when the initial change was starting, was Balailahu, on that night. So they were just framing it in 2 different, we'll call it inflection points, where the changes are being affected. What did Esther say about Mordechai? Ki gid lo mahu loy. She says what his relationship is to her. The Ibn Ezra says, because after all, he is her uncle. Taking the pshat in the psukim, not the drash, that she was married to Mordechai. That would not be helpful necessarily in this expression. Ibn Yechiya explains that, in fact, if you look at this over here, Haman's face has just been covered in shame, and ultimately because he was a condemned man, and Mordechai's face is now revealed. These 2 ideas are put back to back with each other. Mordechai's face is now being revealed. Mahuloi, this mysterious character who used to be hanging around the palaces of the king, suddenly becomes this very enfranchised person because of his relationship with the queen. He has been the benefactor of the queen. What is the point of giving the house to Mordechai exactly? Why is this the necessary gift? The Malbim explains, in those days, the way it would work is that if a person sinned against the king, if a person committed a crime, which was a capital punishment, and the person was executed by the king, by the process of eminent domain, the king would take that property for himself. However, the king wanted to point out that it was not a sin against him for which Haman had been killed, but rather a sin against the queen and her people. Thereby, he gave the house to Mordechai to make it public that this was a sin against the queen. Let's move into the next section, which is Pesukim Gimel to Vav, 3-6, and this is Esther's second plea. Now Esther comes in front of the king again, and she cries, she prostrates herself. She wants to try to now remove the decree of Haman. The king outstretches his scepter once again, and she makes her second plea. If it's the king's will, if I found grace in his eyes, she says, please bring back Yikosev lohashiv hasvarim machshev saman ben amadasa ha'agagi. Please return the decree, the edict that he sent out to the entire empire. And she, the crux of her plea is, ki eichocha uchal v'ra'isi, how can I possibly see Bera'a asher yimsoya sami, with the evil that will befall my nation, eichocha uchal v'ra'isi ba'avdon morality, with the destruction of my birthplace? Why is all this necessary? So clearly it should be obvious to us at this point in time that although Haman has been removed, his decree has not been removed, and were they not to do this, then the edict would be issued. Remember, we're standing at this point in time in the end of the whole parties took place was in Nisan. That's when the fasting took place. We're going to see that Mordechai's books are going to be sent out in Sivan. So it is in this period of time, we're months down the line, but still months ahead, is this genocide which is still slated. So worthwhile noting, Rav Foreman points out that now, once again, Esther borrows the words of Yehuda, the Shevet Yehuda, when in Parshas Vayigash, he makes the presentation to Pharaoh why he cannot leave his brother Binyamin as a slave, and he says, how can I leave and see the evil that will befall my father upon being bereft of a second son? She borrows the same terminology here. This is now when not Yehuda is selling the brother from the other side of the family into slavery by Yosef, which was Nimkarenu B'li Yishma'elim, which was the first, so to speak, speech that Esther uses of Yehuda. Now it's the second speech where she says, look, Yehuda was willing to go and put his life on the line for the other side of the family. I will too. Because one of the dynamics which you should be aware of over here is that Esther and Mordechai are safe. Esther and Mordechai and their friends and cronies and the sides of Binyamin of the family could essentially be were protected from this edict because they could find, through nepotism, through protectia, they could allow them to be saved. The question is not about them, it's about the rest of the Yehudim, which refers primarily to the Jews or those of the tribe of Yehuda, which require immunization or the decree to be removed. Okay, let's move into the next section, section 3, Psukim Zayin to Ches, in which Achashverosh gives permission. First, he starts off by wooing Esther, and he says to her, you know, look, I've already given the house of Haman to Mordechai. I have hanged Haman on the gallows. And he says, you know, I'm going to give you my ring. You can assign it as you wish, but you should know, you can write whatever you want, but something which was sent out and signed by the king's ring, Ein Lehoshiv. Your request is denied. I cannot return what was sent out. And most people read the Megillah without realizing this. Achashverosh has denied her request. He's given her permission to write another edict, but not to deny the first edict. So in a certain sense, he is saying that the royal decree cannot be changed. Why is this so? Rashi explains that because Ein Nohala Shivala says Ksav HaMelech Beziyuv. It would look like the king was being falsified, that he had not thought carefully through his first edict, and therefore that was Persian rule in the day. So what do they do? So this kid brings us to the fourth section of our perek, Psukim Tes, to Yudalad, in which now Mordechai has a fantastic idea. This is now in the third month, this is Sivan, the 23rd of Sivan. He writes the following edict, sends it out to the entire empire, and it reads as follows. He says, Asher nosan ha-melech la-yodim. The king gave permission to the Jews, Asher b'chol ir v'ir, in every city, li'kohel v'la'amoid al nafshom la'ashmid la'roi gal'abeid, es kolchel am m'medina ha'tzorim o'esam taf v'nashim u'shalom v'lavoiz. They can stand up to protect themselves, to kill, to destroy anybody who comes up against them, any army or any group of irregulars who come against them, men, women, children, and they can take the loot from this. And this is going to be on the 13th of Adar. So essentially, if you actually look back to back, the two psukim, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel, that's Haman's edict, and this Perek Ches, Pasuk Yud Aleph, the decree of Haman versus Mordechai, they are almost word for word the same. He is giving the reflected Gezerah, but now it's instead of it, the nations giving the opportunity to kill and pillage the Jews, it is the Jews to defend themselves and, in a certain sense, pillage back, which you're going to see that's not going to happen. It's a carbon copy in the opposite direction. Well, how will this help them? Won't this just create a civil war in the Persian Empire? So it would seem that Da'at Mikra Ramos Chacham points out that yes, but the people will understand that the federal forces will be on the side of the later edict, which is the Jews. Why? And then at the end of the section, it describes how Haratzim Rochvei HaRechesh HaAchashtaranim Yotzu Mevohalim Uduchufim. They went out in a rush to get this edict out, which is strange because we're in Sivan. The decree of desolation and genocide is only in next Adar, so it's months away. Why does that have to be such a pressing issue? So the first point to consider is that Mordechai wanted to, as Ibn Ezra suggests, to relieve the Jews who are in a state of mourning. At this point in time, worldwide Jewry is in abject mourning. So he wanted to alleviate that by doing this as fast as possible, to alleviate their emotional pressure. The Malim says that in the same way that Haman sent out these decrees and, so to speak, distracted Shushan and had a whole feast for the king, so there would be no intercession. There would be nobody else who would come in and intercede on behalf of the Jews before the edict arrived at its station. Mordechai did exactly the same thing. Before anybody else would come in and say, Achashverosh, you know, really, you should. Right, the king, in a certain sense, if we were to adopt the idea that Melech Tipesh Haya, that he was a king who really didn't have too much of his own agenda, he was at the will and mercy of very nefarious individuals or people who had his ear, Mordechai didn't want any other Hamans to walk into the king's palace and make another case in the other way. So he wanted to make sure that the edict would reach all the 127 provinces of the Persian Empire before Shushan even knew, which is why the Pasuk states it in such a way that Shushan only actually receives knowledge of this is after it arrived in the other, in the 127 states. Okay, the last few psukim of the perek are psukim tezvov to yud zayin, and this describes psukim which we actually say aloud in the community when we're reading the Megillah. Umorachai atzolim mitfei amelech bilavush valchus techeles vachur ater zahov gudolov atachrich uputz v'argamon v'ir shushan v'sa'olav v'samecha. He leaves in all this extraordinarily lavish garb. He's wearing a crown. He's wearing all these beautiful things. The Jews had light and happiness and rejoicing and preciousness and gravitas. What is a very, very beautiful description. And of course, Chazal Darshan, what each one refers to, tefillin and all the different mitzvahs that are accompanied with this. And everybody sees this, and suddenly there's this wave of people, Rabim Me'am Ha'aretz Mis Yahadim, new word. They are becoming Jewish, making themselves Jewish. So why is this section necessary? Why is this such an important section to have right here? So the Dat Mikra points out that this is a direct reflection. Our Perek Ches, is a reflection of Perek Gimel. Remember, everything in the Megillah operates in opposites. V'naha Poichu. So in Perek Gimel, we saw there was Haman. He writes this edict. The edict went out very, very fast. And there was this feasting of Haman and Mordechai, Haman and Ahasuerus, while Shushan was in mourning. Mordechai is donned in sackcloth. Here we have exactly the opposite. Mordechai is now sending out the edict to all the 127 provinces. It's also going out very fast. Shushan is celebrating as opposed to mourning. And Mordechai, as opposed to wearing the garments of mourning, is now wearing the garments of rejoicing. So just all of these pieces reflect in each other in terms of putting these two prakim together in terms of the chiasm of the Greater Megillah. Also, you should know, notice that over here, that the grandeur of Mordechai is not just noticed by the people of Shushan, but by the whole world at large. And this is important, because this last point is a idea that I heard from Rav Moshe Stav, one of my rabbeim in Israel, who said a very fascinating point. Is that imagine that you were the sheriff of a Yehupetzville, you know, out in the Persian Empire. You're in the eastern corridor of the and you don't really have, you know, I'm saying, you're a town of 30, you know, 30 families, one main street and one store, you know, and you get, you know, comes in Nisan, and you receive this edict from the king. A messenger arrives, and they hear ye, all people can kill Jews on such and such a date in almost a year's time. So you're like, okay, you put it onto the you hang it onto the lamppost outside the general store, and that's it. But then a couple months later, you receive another edict which says exactly the opposite on the same day. So you're scratching your head. I mean, like, what's the sheriff going to do exactly? How is he going to manage his town? So what he does is like this. He sends a message to his friend who has a friend who lives in Shushan, and he says, tell me something. Who's in charge in Shushan? Tell me, what's going on? Is it the Jews or is it the anti-Semites? Tell me which one's in charge, and I'll know which one is the gazera which prevails. Because this is really confusing for me out here in Yehupetzville. And he gets the message back from his friend, who has a friend in Shushan, who says, you know, I just noticed that Mordechai HaYehudi is walking around with great airs. He's taken the house of Haman. He's walking around with a crown. Everybody is surrounding him, and people are converting. So the sheriff says, oh, I got it. Thank you so much. Now you've explained to me which side the federal forces are going to support. And that's exactly the point of Mordechai's grandeur. He needed to take this as part of his plan necessary to succeed. With this, we close the perek. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.